Paul Scott. Hello.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Hey, Jack. Yeah, brilliant. How are you?
Yeah, good, good.
Okay. Now, I don't want to edit the audio file, so let's just go straight into it. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Scott here. I've got Jack Brumby on the line with me. We thought we'd trial a podcast, an end-of-week summary of the Small Cap Value Reports, for people who don't want to wade through all five reports and might want to listen to us whittering on when you're walking the dog or something. So hello, Jack, and welcome.
Hi, good to see you, Paul.
Yeah, right. And now, I thought let's work backwards from Friday through to Monday, just really flagging up the most interesting companies. Should we do them alternately? Me do a quick one and then over to you and backwards and forwards?
Sounds good.
We haven't planned anything, by the way, listeners. We're just doing this off the hoop. So today I started off looking at Quiz, 20 million market cap, tiny little retailer of women's wear, special occasion wear. I should disclose this is one of my top three holdings. It's a turnaround situation. Anyway, they put out a Christmas trading update that was in line. Everything looks fine. I think it's a good recovery story, and it's got 6 million quid net cash in the bank. So I think that's a good one with a sort of two-year view. Over to you, Jack. One of yours from today.
So the first one I looked at was probably the most interesting one. That's Senior. It's around a £600 million market cap. It's an international manufacturer of high-tech components for aerospace, defense, land vehicles, things like that. It generates revenues of more than $1 billion. So it's a big company compared to some of the others we look at. I think it's got a quality rank of around 77. Which is good when you, because the quality rank lasts a little longer than some of the other ranks, and Senior's had a very tricky couple of years, particularly in its aerospace division, things like that. So how it comes across is basically it's in line, it seems like it's recovering, it's net cash generative, and it's managed to pay down quite a chunk of debt, actually. So I think that one looks potentially interesting.
Okay. Then next today, I did a very quick update on XAAR, X-A-A-R. The ticker is X-A-R. This was from yesterday, trading update, saying it moved into profit in H2. You can work out that H2 would have been at least 2.3 million profit because it lost 2.3 million in H1. And they said they've become profitable for the whole year. I can't really value it, so I don't know. I'm just neutral on this one. So moving on to back to you again, Jack.
Yeah, my second of the day is very short. I'm neutral too. It's just Smart Space Software. So it released an extremely brief trading update with a more detailed one to come out in February. But this is it's just one of those grand old Duke of York share price charts, you know, all the way up to the top of the hill, all the way back down again.
It's fallen a lot, hasn't it? I hadn't realized that.
Yeah, indeed. It's very illiquid, you know, micro cap, and the community's kind of been selling it, so pushes the price down, obviously, quite a lot. We're just going to have to wait until February to dig into it a little more, I think.
Yeah, so it's 23 million market cap now, Smart Space. Ticker SMRT on this one. I know quite a few shrewd microcap investors who are in this, actually, and I've never really seen the attraction myself because it's loss-making every year, very small turnover. And it does sort of software for managing buildings, doesn't it, and meeting rooms. Mm. And I think it's more sophisticated than that. But there must be so much competition in that space, I would imagine, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those where right now I think you can't really rely on the previous financials or anything like that. You need to have a bit of an edge, a bit of an insight into the company, the management, the software. Yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think the trouble is, one of the things we've touched on this week as well, and it was actually one of the readers who flagged it up to me, is that there's been a massive bear market in America in speculative, overvalued tech, hasn't there? Anything basically that doesn't make any money, that's on a vast multi-billion valuation because of future hopes, has been absolutely smashed up over the last year. I think that behind this, I wasn't actually aware of this until about a week or two ago, because I don't follow the US, but I've started doing so now because it sets the tone for the UK, doesn't it? Maybe this is why so many UK small caps have tanked in the last 3 or 4 months.
Potentially. I also wonder as well, over the past year and a half, 18 months, you know, you've got lockdowns and it's done all sorts of interesting temporary dynamics, and probably over the past year or so there's been a flood of PI money coming in and possibly going back out, and I wonder if some stocks such as Smart Space, whether illiquid, maybe that dynamic has driven some share price action.
Yeah, could be, because I think a lot of people who dived into the market in March 2020 when it halved on the COVID stuff just think that shares only ever go up. And probably are dabbling in Bitcoin as well, and suddenly they're learning, as we all are really, that you can get complacent in the good times. Okay, anything other from this day? I looked at a couple of ones, both of which I think are really awful and potential wipeouts for equity. One is Cineworld, ticker C-I-N-E, put out a Q4 trading update. I think it's the world's second largest cinema chain. But what they didn't mention at all in the trading update is that they've got over $5 billion worth of gross debt. And the thing, I mean, really, is practically insolvent, I think. It's only, the equity's only survived because of the forbearance of the debt providers. So I do think people, I just really want to flag up to listeners how dangerous this stock is. It's entirely dependent on the debt holders playing ball, which they may at any point just decide to call in the loans and wipe out equity. So it's very, very high risk, that one. And the other one in a similar vein, actually, Sensine Health, which I've never looked at before, ticker S-E-N-S. That was a top faller today, down 69%. So I thought I'd take a look at it. And it's bust, basically. It's run out of money. It's burning over $2 million a month, and it's got $2.8 million left. And I wrote up quite a long section on this, drawing out comparisons with the dot-com boom and bust and so on. And you could see it all quite obviously from the accounts. There was an alarming going concern note earlier last, you know, at least 6 months ago. So I think if people just buy into these story stocks and don't actually check the accounts, it's very, you're a lamb to the slaughter, really. Now, another one I looked at today was Equals, EQLS. That put out a trading update earlier in the week. Now, you're the expert on this one. So what's your view on Equals?
Well, Equals, I still remember it changed its name, didn't it? But
yeah, Fair FX it used to be.
Fair FX, yeah, that's right. I remember Paul Hill owns this one. I know he knows it quite well.
Yeah.
But I think probably the fall's been overdone here. I think, let me get my old notes up. You just give me a second.
Well, this one's been a good continuous riser over the last year. Mm. So, and I think the trading update was quite good. I haven't got it in front of me. I put you on the spot a bit here, haven't I, because I read that section.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, I think then the gist of it was it's been historically loss-making, but it's now growing revenues about 50%, that was it, and they're saying they're 52%, and they're saying they're now a fintech type business with some sort of apps or software that SMEs can use to manage their forex, something along those lines. I'm sorry, I'm very vague, but it might be one of these things that's reached an inflection point maybe and is turning positive, I don't know.
Yeah, I've just been scanning over my previous write-up. So I recall now it was Equal Solution is its growth product. It's a multi-currency sort of card, I think, aimed at larger business. So that's going quite well. Substantial growth, it said, with white label business opportunities. Meanwhile, the old business is business to consumer travel money products. And obviously that was smashed in COVID too. So That was about 5% of the total revenue when I last looked at it, and obviously you would hope that recovers as travel demand recovers. So yeah, a couple of drivers there potentially.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know how to value it. That was the other thing on Equals. I can't remember what it's valued at. Is it 80 million? 132 million market cap, which is a lot for a company that has only just tipped into break-even, isn't it? But I know Paul Hill's a very good stock picker and a very successful investor, PA. So if he thinks it's good, it's worth a look, I think. So, okay, that's today's report. We've done that in 12 minutes, which isn't too bad. So let's look at Thursday's. I've just got to close a couple of tabs on Keir Starmer and Ann Widdecombe to get to the right page. Hang on. Yes, Thursday. Now, that was ASOS reporting, which I know it's out of our remit, but I always cover it for Read Across for Boohoo. And it was a lot better than I expected. They were actually in line. So that was quite good. Then Card Factory put out a bit of a bombshell. The update looked good, but then right at the end, they said they put a profit warning out for the next financial year, saying their costs were going to rise by 30 million, which is a huge amount for that size of company. And they didn't give a breakdown of what that is, which certainly frightened the horses. It dropped the shares 10 or 15%, and I think makes it uninvestable now. So it really flagged up to me this issue of for any business that employs a lot of staff, retail, hospitality, supermarkets, the wage cost inflation is a massive problem at the moment, isn't it?
Definitely. I've actually, just on that point, I've actually just come off a call with the investor relations at Royal Mail Group, and obviously I think wages there are about 50% of revenues and 65% of the total cost base, so they were talking about wage inflation quite a lot, and it's definitely, we've got a recruiter coming up in one of these updates, but yeah, the flip side of that, good for recruiters, but companies with big labor costs, it's definitely something to bear in mind.
Yeah, I think I worked out with Royal Mail, if you add 10% to their total labour cost, it wipes out their entire profit. I think that's right off the top of my head. So yeah, that is a concern, isn't it? With lots of things. Now, you looked at Circassia, is it, on Thursday? What's the story there?
Yeah, I did. Two interesting companies, actually. First one's Circassia. So again, it's another one that I don't know particularly too well, but I've heard it as like a tip from, well, just David Thornton, I think. But yeah, he's been talking about it for a little while now. And the story there is basically it's a recovery stock. It was a Neil Woodford-backed disaster. And the phase 3 drug failed. So there was a couple of operational setbacks. And then presumably when you couple that with Woodford selling out, the share price got to very low levels. Then you've got a new management team coming in. You've got some different shareholders. You've got some churn there. The management team here, as well as some ex-BioQuell people, and what they did there was basically turn that around and sell it. So probably a similar outcome here is what people are hoping for. The key target for the management team, they got all their incentives paid out at 62.4p. Where is it now? It was about 46p when I wrote on it. Let's see. Now it is 42.8p. So it's come back down a bit, actually. The thing with that is, even though the share price is down quite a lot, the market cap's about £190 million, so it's not a small company at all, and particularly revenue trailing 12 month I think is around £30 million. So it's just turned profitable, I believe. It's sort of at that inflection point. So what it's got right now is it's offloaded a lot of non-core stuff, and it's focusing on its Neox product, which is a market leader in the asthma market, apparently, which is obviously huge. So people are expecting quite a lot of growth there, and that does need to happen, really, because it's already quite a large market cap.
Sounds like you're a bit skeptical. So shall we move on?
I think move on.
Yeah, okay. Countryside Properties, I looked at. Proper profit warning on Thursday. I don't like the look of this at all. Their Q1 figures were awful, and I don't think it's cheap. So that one, I think, is a possible problems generally for the house building, or rather the building sector, if things are turning down. Science Group, now this one I really liked, SAG. Hmm. This was a really impressive trading update, and it's about the third or fourth one. I think you've written about this one before. Very good company. I think readers would do well. But we're not recommending anything, obviously. The Stockopedia is all about people doing their own work and taking their own decisions. But I do think the numbers look very good at Science. It's reasonably priced, PE of about 17. It's got cash, net cash on the balance sheet, and it's strongly outperformed. So, yeah, that's a good one. Another good one on Thursday was Finsbury Food, FIF. Reassuring update for H1. Now, they've managed to absorb or mitigate the cost increases so far, and it's on a PE of just under 10 with a decent balance sheet. So I think that's a nice company. Anything else you covered on Thursday, Jack? Oh, Quixent. Any good?
Yeah. The other one was Quixent. So out of all of the stocks I covered this week, Quixent's probably up there in terms of liking what I see, I believe. It's the first time I've really looked at it. It's been quite a volatile ride for shareholders over the past couple of years. Something actually went a little bit wrong before COVID to do with key customers losing market share. Mm. But what Quixent does is QXT is a ticker. It's got two divisions, that's gaming and Densitron, which it acquired in 2015. So for gaming, it's gaming hardware platforms and software solutions for kind of sports betting. Then Densitron, it's specialists in human-machine interaction. So, you know, it's just kind of touch screens, basically. Mm. And what it's saying here is EPS upgrades were kind of brought down, but this update is now ahead of those revised expectations. There's been no activity in the EPS forecast charts at all, really, which kind of makes me think it is covered, but are the consensus expectations sort of quite behind the curve?
So well, in a good or bad way?
In a good way.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's been no equity dilution. The shares, I think they're about half what they were. Let's see.
So it might be worth a closer look, we're saying, are we, on that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, great. So I'm just trying to move things on because we've got so many things to cover. So the other stocks on that day, I looked at Acrol Group, ACRL, another profit warning. They can't part the repeat waves of cost inflation that they can't pass on quick enough. I just don't like the business model there. They're doing a strategic review. I think they're going to have to try and move to open book costing. Otherwise, the whole thing, you'll never be able to tie down any visibility on earnings. The one I did like on Thursday was Port Merion. Wednesday, rather, we're on, aren't we? PMP, impressive trading update for year ending December 2021. This was a really good update. They said, just really simply and clearly, we expect to deliver profit 9% above market expectations. I mean, what could be simpler? Why can't all companies just say that instead of all this silly coded language, materially ahead, significantly ahead, and then not telling you what the forecasts are? You know, so this is perfect. And I actually sent the management an email to say, well done for clarity, and you've given us exactly what we want. Really nice turnaround underway there. It's still reasonably priced. Unfortunately, I sold mine a few months ago because I panicked about supply chain and I had margin calls. Something had to go. So I really regret selling that one. What else did you cover on Wednesday, Jack? Oh, you did Gately and MPAC. So what do you think of those?
So Gately, the day before as well, I'd covered another professional services group called Knights Group. So I might as well roll them into two. So what's happened there is there's about six of these companies that are listed, and about 8 years or so ago, there was some legislation enacted, basically made consolidation and the M&A activity and listing more viable for professional services and legal firms. Mm-hmm. So Knights Group and Gately fit into that bracket. Of the two, Knights is a bit bigger. Gately's been smaller, but it's been operating for close to a century now. I believe it's based up in Birmingham. And it's the one, I much prefer Gately of the two on this run through. It's got higher stock ranks as well, just better Rockies, more predictable or more reliable profitability. One thing about Knights, all of these companies tend to acquire at the moment, but with Knights, the Rocky is not so good and the operating margin's been coming down. So there's a question mark over if those acquisitions are adding value, whereas Gately seems to be much more sensible and is, you know, retaining those margins and things like that. So it's also on a lower rating as well. So I think of the two, I just think Gately is the clear winner in that battle.
Yeah, and I've looked at RBG Holdings as well in the past, and that, I think the CEO who runs that is really, really impressive, really switched on with a great track record. And what about MPAC? I've liked MPAC in the past when I've looked at it, but I've not looked at it recently. So what's your view?
Yeah, it looks good. It looks good. I mean, it's been a heck of a share price performance there. On a five-year chart, it's up from 72p to 514p by the time I wrote this article. It's all part of, it disposed of Mullins. It's got this one MPAC strategy, which is kind of making a more integrated enterprise as a whole, you know, behind the scenes ERP systems and better overview digitally of its different businesses. So it's packaging, it's got it's things like food and beverage packaging. I remember it acquired something called Switchback over in the US maybe a year ago, and that's beverage packaging as well.
Yeah, it's so, a good one, that. There is a pension deficit, isn't there?
There is, yeah. In fact, that's the clear thing that stands out. The pension scheme is very big versus the market cap of the company. The assets are $430 million and the liabilities are about $400 million there.
Wow, that's huge, isn't it?
Yeah,
$100 million market cap company. So, yeah, that's four times the market cap.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't ignore it. But no. One thing about that is it's in surplus. It's currently still paying pension contributions, so that could stop at some point, which would boost cash flows. You've got the interest rate situation to think about.
Yeah, it's huge. Just on that point with the interest rates, I'm scrutinizing companies with pension deficits to see what they're saying about it. And I forget the company, but I think there have been a couple recently who said rising bond yields are reducing their liabilities. So we could be, if you think bond yields are going to increase further, then that could be very helpful for companies with pension deficits. But you often get this massive gap between the accounting deficit, which often looks quite minimal, and the actuarial deficit, which requires massive cash overpayments. So I always follow the cash. That's what I'm interested in, because if they're having to make $5 billion a year or something into the pension fund for a small cap, that's money that would otherwise be paid as divvies, isn't it? So, yeah, okay. And that's covered Wednesday. Pushing on then to Tuesday. I'm sorry I'm rushing this, but I want to try and do it all within 30 minutes maximum. Where is it? Sorry, bear with me. Tuesday we're looking at next, isn't it?
Yep, Tuesday.
Okay, Tuesday. Yes, here we are. Now, the standout one for me on this day was Shoezone. Really remarkable figures, and it put about 20% on the share price. 14p earnings per share, which put them on a PE of less than 10. Balance sheet's fixed. It hasn't diluted during the pandemic. Management owner-managers own about half the company. They're closing down loads of small shops and opening mid and larger size shops on amazing rental deals. There's a lot to like about it, but I did do some digging on the balance sheet, and I think the profits are being boosted by the unwinding of the IFRS 16 right of use asset figures. I've worked through the double entry, and that wasn't, so I think they are getting a boost actually to profits from effectively the unwinding of onerous lease provisions, which wasn't really flagged, but in a broker note they did flag a benefit from that. So that's possibly a theme we might have to keep an eye out for lots of retail type businesses. But it looks good, and I've dipped my toe in with a small personal purchase as well. Now, you covered RWA. That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a good one. It's a recruiter, so recruiter's booming at the moment. we were just talking about wage inflation for companies with high labor costs as a bad thing, but the flip side of that is a wage inflation environment is probably good for recruiters. So Robert Walters has got very strong momentum at the moment, multiple upgrades. It could continue, really, if you think about just there's a lot of countries out there kind of facing the same wage inflationary dynamics. And Robert Walters is good, actually, because it's international. So it's got Europe operations, Asia Pacific, other international, UK. So it's quite big. Mm-hmm. The founder is still the CEO and holds stock. So net fee income was up 21% for the full year, comfortably ahead of expectations. So this was another like ahead update. Breaking that down, Asia Pacific NFI was up 56%, Europe up 36%, other international, which is smaller, was 48% up, UK about 7%, I think. So just a good momentum across the board.
I think I've had a brain seizure here because I can't see it on Monday's report. I don't know if I'm looking at the wrong thing.
It's Tuesday.
Oh, is it Tuesdays? Is that what we're on at the moment?
Yeah.
Sorry, I've had too much coffee. I ordered 150 Nespresso capsules. There are 15 different types, and I'm trying out all the different ones, and I think I've overdosed. So let's call up Tuesday's report again. They're all horrible as well. I really don't like Nespresso at all. No, disgusting. So, that was it. Yeah, we've covered Tuesdays, haven't we, more or less?
Let's
go to Mondays then, the last one. I think we're going to just get in within half an hour. Now, I've got Cambridge Cognition contract win. ELSA did the unwinding of moving Hotter Shoes, which is called Unbound, onto AIM, so that was done. Cortex I looked at, very expensive but interesting international growth. The standout one for me was Boom, Audio Boom. That's really turned a corner now, and it's looking like a proper viable business. Hardly making any profit, though, and valued at $200 million. So, valuation, but it's good to see it finally turn the corner under new management. So do you want to have a talk about a couple of yours from Monday?
Yeah, well, Monday, that was very much, you held the fort there on Monday. I just looked at one company, which was Tortilla Mexican Grill. A recent IPO. This was my old patch, really, sort of fast casual restaurants and things like that.
Yeah, of course, and lovely product. I've tried them. They're really good.
Yeah, as have I. I've still got one of those buy five, get one free cards somewhere in my wallet. But so Tortilla, it sounds like it's doing really well. If you look at the share price chart, it IPO'd and then the shares came down. I mean, it's probably lockdown related, presumably, as we headed into December and Omicron started flaring up. Where it's at now, it's got 60 sites across the UK and the UAE. Market cap's about £74 million. There are some companies of this type which are probably valued more expensively than that, but it's still not cheap, I would say. The trading momentum is good, though, and the placing proceeds are being used to accelerate the UK rollout, so it's all about whether your product resonates with the public. You can have five different restaurant companies, and it's all about which one sort of catches fire and can be rolled out. If you think about lounges as well in the kind of all-day bar market, there's many people out there trying to be a lounges, but there's only one lounges.
Yeah. It's all down to management, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So they've got about 60 sites right now. The medium-term target's to open about 45 sites, which would take them to 100 or so. I think if it does take hold, you could probably have about 200 tortillas around the UK. I haven't done much more of a look beyond that. Oh, so group revenue was up 79% and up 36% compared to FY 2019, which is pre-pandemic. So, yeah, the momentum there is worth investigating.
Yeah, I liked it. I read the IPO, the admission document when it listed, and it's on my watch list, but I've decided to hold back because they've had such a huge benefit from the business rates relief, as have a lot of companies. And when the dust settles, some of these things may not be as profitable as we might think. And also, I think they did quite well on delivery, didn't they? So when the sites were closed, they were actually trading quite well through delivery channels, which is good if that becomes permanent business, which it might well do for some of these companies. So, yeah. Okay, I think that's probably, I think we covered everything. Oh, Nightcap as well. I had a look at them. Difficult to value, but I noticed the Stockopedia page has just been updated, actually, with new data on that. And on the current broker for consensus, the valuation actually looks quite reasonable. So I might be turning positive on that. I think that covers everything, Jack. Shall we leave it there? Because we've just run over half an hour. Have you got any final points you wanted to make?
No, I think that sounds good to me. It's good to just rattle through the past week.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's fresh in our mind, and it's not any extra work that impinges on the weekend. So I think this is quite a good format. So what do you think? Should we be bold and publish this, or should we scrap it?
Well, I say let's publish.
Yay! I was thinking that as well. We didn't make too many cock-ups, did we? And at least, unlike my end-of-year video, nobody sees me spilling my cup of tea down my jumper. Great. Thanks, Jack. Have a great weekend, and I'll put this up on the website this evening.
All right. You too, Paul. See you Monday.
Cheers. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Paul Scott.